Welcome to the Cashflow Champs podcast, the show where we demystify real estate investing so you have the tools you need to gain financial freedom through passive investments in real estate. And now your host, Cashflow Champs Managing Partner, Prashant Kumar.
Welcome to the Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast, hosted by Paul Sr. and my partner, Prashant Kumar. Today, we have Tom Burns with us. We're so excited to have you today, Tom.
I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Tom Burns is entrepreneur, retired orthopedic surgeon, and a physician for the United States ski team. He has over 25 years of real estate experience and has acquired or developed over $700 million of real estate locally and internationally. He is a co-author and principal of Personario Ventures, a private equity real estate company focused on apartment development and private equity in Texas and the Sun Belt. Dr. Burns is the author of Why Doctors Don't Get Rich, a best-selling personal finance book for those who want to live life at their fullest. He is sought-after speaker and mentor and has been financially independent for well over a decade. He is founder of the Rich Life Mastermind, created to help people create financial independence so that they can control their future and travel to exotic places with him. Well, Mr. Burns, thanks so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate you to be here. And we just want to start off by saying, tell us a little bit more about yourself if we haven't covered it here, and so we can delve into today's session.
Yeah, grew up in Austin, Texas, got two healthy kids and a wife of 39 years, and started life, actually thinking I was going to be an athlete, but found out quickly I wasn't going to get paid for that. So that's what spurred me to be a doctor. I was an orthopedic surgeon and a sports medicine guy. I knew athletes. And so I followed that path. And, I followed the path in medicine that is very specialized. You know, there's no accounting, no statistics, no economics. There's nothing like that. There's just, how to be a doctor, right? And so about halfway through my training as an orthopedic surgeon, which I think is fairly important, we're trained by the apprenticeship model. We're trained by the people that we're supposed to be in 10, 20, 30 years. So it's like a mirror into the future. I didn't see that those men and women were as happy as I intended to be. They were complaining about their situation. They felt trapped here and there. They were sometimes on second and third marriages. And so because of that, I thought, I probably ought to create something that's not correlated with medicine. Didn't really have the cash flow and the passive income verbiage yet. I just needed something coming in that wasn't correlated with medicine. So that was where I started my training. And, I started with no time, no money, no network, no experience, no education. I started with nothing. I knew how to fix a knee, right? So I just read a bunch of stuff, learned what I could, and got out and became a physician, paid off a few bills that I owed, and I won't go further, but what I did, the only thing I knew at the time was I bought something so that I could start learning. And so that's what started my real estate career early in my doctor life. And things just kind of grew organically from there.
It's amazing. I'm pretty sure you probably did some research or something like that, and looked like you ended up with your focus being an apartment development. What draw you there? What was the pull to go into that area of business?
Yeah, I wish I was as well put together that I did research and figured out that this is just the right asset class. Not true. I bought student condominiums first. I bought mobile home stuff. I bought discounted notes. I bought cell towers. I didn't care what I bought, as long as it put money in the asset column that was creating me passive income. However, over time you buy units and you buy things in singles, and then you get pretty good at it. So you buy them in bunches, right? You buy little complexes, and then people understand that you'll close a deal. So they bring deals to you. Other people come and want a partner. I've had good and bad partners. As I've now sifted them all out, I have good partners now, but you partner with folks, and with partners, you can buy bigger projects. So it just kind of happened organically. And then my partner, Presario, he's got, land development experience, retail, things like that. I've got office development, student property. We've both had kind of diverse backgrounds, and both had kind of done some multi-tenant stuff. And we just figured in I don't know, it was 2008 or so, good time to do this. But in 2008, we felt that apartments would have a pretty good run, we thought, over the next couple of decades. So we would have gone and bought something, but we happened to own some land. So by default, we ended up in apartment development. And so that's really kind of how it happened. Now, we've done subsequent research to think we're still in the right place on a long-term basis. You know, it's a little hiccup right now, but it won't last forever. So that's kind of how we got into multifamily.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So is your development, you're going full steam ahead with that right now, given the conditions in the market, or you think you kind of pivot in just a little bit, or are you kind of on the wait and pause for a little bit? What's your status right now as it pertains to your business?
Yes, and sort of. We are still moving with development. However, about 15 months ago, we thought we saw problems in the capital markets. And so we had a very robust pipeline. And you know, some of that development debt starts with some variable debt, unless it's a HUD project, which takes a long time to get, but you got fixed construction debt when you're with HUD. But so we cut our pipeline back dramatically, started looking for things that would maybe do a little better during rising interest rate times. So yes, we had some projects going. So we're pulling the reins on those. And I'll tell you, you know, COVID and supply chain issues, they have really stretched out the development and building time, as well as stretched out the lease up time. So that costs money. And so it's, you know, those are all going to do fine, but we've had to really put some effort to them and, you know, put a little money in there to make sure it's okay. And that's all going to be fine. So that took most of our work. You don't, when there is any kind of a slowdown, you don't want to get out. You want to stay in the market. So you see when things change, you know, when there's a good buy or a good build, so to speak. And so we own a number of pieces of land. We have just slowed the process. We're entitled and ready to go on one. Another one we're entitled, but kind of letting it sit. And we are planning certain developments. We're looking at certain acquisitions, maybe in the tax advantaged arena, but that sort of depends on how things turn out in the Texas legislature. So we're looking at those. We have pretty deep experience with public facility corporations from the past. And then the last one, he said, did you do a pivot? I didn't do a real pivot, but if you think when you're driving down the highway and you drift a little bit off into the other lane, we're on the right road. We're almost in our lane, but we went to something that we've studied for 2 years. It's extended stay hotels. It's a strange pivot. It's a multi-tenant product, and it's not where you go to have your vacation. It is a hybrid between, you know, the Marriott where you take your kids to swim at the pool and a workforce housing. You put those two together. This is short-term, low risk to the tenant as far as, you know, they can stay for a day, a week, a month, or a year. And we looked at those, and a lot of people in my old world, my doctor world, we have, you know, visiting techs, visiting nurses, visiting surgeons that spend 3 months, 6 months, sometimes a year at a place, they'll tend to stay at an extended stay hotel. So the numbers are basically that 40% of people stay 30 days or more in those. So we looked at it for 2 years, and we're now partnered up with a good, strong partner of ours that we worked with before. And so we're developing extended stay hotels over a couple of states, Alabama and Texas, a small portfolio of about five of them. So it's been an education for our investors and for us, but we think it's going to be a nice, and you know, all the numbers in the press has just gotten better since we started it. So that was our pivot to answer that question.
That's super awesome that, you know, you are pivoting into different asset classes and basically going into hotel and kind of a hybrid between Marriott and the workforce housing.
Yeah.
I want to take a step back. I mean, I know these projects take a long time, you know, to develop, you know, a year, 2 years. And over the last couple of years, you know, yes, you got into a project in 2020 and it is not live yet. And the markets have changed, you know, dynamics have changed. Lenders have become strict, you know, bridge loans, this and that.
Yep.
I want to understand from you as an experienced person, how do you navigate those challenges? I mean, you understand what I'm asking, you know, I'm asking the deeper question when, while you are inside the project and the things change,
yep,
you know, absolutely. Lending change, you know, cost of the construction change, inflation goes up, you know, Ukraine war, there are 100 different variables which we did not think about at the time of going into the deal, and they show right. up. What happens then?
You bet. So I can go back in two phases. So we had the stuff that was going when things were good, right? Everything's good then. And we still, you know, you should always use really conservative underwriting and still have a reasonable, if you're building something, if you're building or buying something, you still need a reasonable contingency because, you know, stuff happens, right? So that's one thing. But the LTV ratios were pretty high back in the day because money was free, right? So you're getting we had 83% on our HUD projects. That can be pretty standard. So that's one thing. Let me stay with those old projects. So most of our development projects have GMAX contracts where, you know, we negotiate with the contractor. And if there's, for the majority of any overages, the contractor takes care of it, unless it's something that's carved out that we decide on our own that we want to change. So that helps. Always contingency. And do we get it right all the time? No, of course not. You know, if we started a project in 2020, life was great, things were good. And, you know, when it starts, if the loan starts amortizing or your lease up is too slow or something happens, there's, you know, some extra money's got to go in there. It's going to come back. But, you know, typically in my firm, we will typically put the money in. So we don't like cash calls. We haven't ever done one yet. So that's how we've handled those projects that were going. If you do a HUD project, that rate is fixed. I mean, it's fixed from the day you put the shovel in the ground. You get 20 months of fixed rate interest only. Then you start amortizing after 20 months, and then you get 40 years after that. So it's nice. It's a lot of brain damage to get a HUD loan, but once you get it, we love them. We do a combination of HUD and commercial. Back in the day, you could buy a rate cap. Now you've got to have a Tiffany diamond to be able to get a rate cap. It's very expensive to get those. So going forward, what we've done, and something to note, apartment starts have declined by, I've seen multiple things, anywhere from 60 to 76%. So starts have declined. We think that's a good thing. You know, anything that we have on the ground growing now is gonna, you know, get birthed, so to speak, or be ready for lease up and stabilization when there's potentially a supply issue in apartments. So we think there's going to be that. So going forward, what we do certainly lower loan to value, and we've got, you know, we looked at doing one at 50% LTV, but, you know, we're 60 and 65 LTV now. That lowers your risk. We try to get that debt fixed as much as we can when we're speaking with the lender. At least, you know, we get a certain fixed amount, or we can, and we can cap it. We can still cap things. It's just, you know, it's a price, you know, risk reward ratio. So you try to build in contingencies. We lower loan to value, caps if you can, and a little extra contingency money. Because if you don't use it, we can give it back to the investors. But it's nice to have it and not need to use it, rather than need to use it and not have it. So we try to do all those things. We, you know, everybody says they underwrite conservatively. We hope we do. I can tell you, I had a under 30 director in our company who laid out what she thought was a conservative number once. And I said, you know, go back 20 years and see what the actual rent increase was over the last 20 years, the average, and it was below what she thought was conservative. So we're teaching them, we're teaching ourselves. I'm making mistakes every day and learning from them. So we're just trying to do the best we can. We try to do sensitivity tables. You know, what if we're at 80% occupancy, or if rents are flat for 3 years, or, you know, that sort of thing. And if interest rates rise to our cap. So like on our extended stay portfolio, we're capped at something like 8%, which is pretty high, but we're capped there at least, you know, and as it goes down, we get the benefit. So we underwrote at 8%. Well, yeah, we underwrote at 8%.
That's awesome. Dr. Burns, you know, I know there are very good moments in life, but I want to start from the worst. You know, what are the worst things that has happened, and what have you learned from them?
You know, I'll tell you, it usually comes, you know, I always tell people I got pretty good at losing money. You know, that's how I learned my lessons. Never lost investor money yet. You know, and that's going to happen in the future, I suspect. But it usually comes down to people. And you can underwrite, you can do the numbers on a deal, get enough people to look at that. You can make your best guess. None of us know what the future is going to be. So every pro forma is a lie, according to a friend of mine, because it's talking about the future, even ours. So you try to underwrite the people. And I can tell you without getting too specific, deals that have gone bad have been because of people. And bad people, bad smart people that had decided to go bad and could probably make money really well if they stayed honest. But that's a pretty honest answer for you. It's a kind of feels like a violation, and try to do things right, and somebody decides that they want, you know, free money or free something. So that those were the ones that affected me the most emotionally.
Dr. Burns, I want to dig in a little bit more in terms of your business, kind of from with a layman terms in terms of what you do. So you do new development construction for multifamily build out. And so when you build those out, I mean, do you sell those at lease up to operators who want to come and operate the business and take over from there? Can you delve in a little bit more in terms of what you do for our audiences to understand a little bit better?
Yeah, and we've really changed over time. You know, that project in 2008-09 was it was us. I mean, we were the developers. We were the guys getting our boots muddy. We hired the contractor. We did all that stuff, and we had much less of a staff back then. We've morphed into more of kind of a private equity company. So we will partner. You know, let's say you're a true apartment developer, Paul. You know, we'll bring the money, the asset management, the debt, that sort of stuff, the underwriting. So we'll tend to combine with people now, and we will do that in apartment development, apartment acquisition, obviously extended stay development. That's a new deal for us. We do build to rent projects. And so everything that I've mentioned is all development. And that's just because I think that's where our DNA is right now. And most of the people, you know, the land people know who we are. I mean, we source land, we buy it. What we'll do is we'll buy the land. Then I might bring you in if you're the developer and say, all right, I got this piece of land where, you know, we're entitled for 330 units. Let's put a plan together and let's do it together. So that's mostly what we do. We absolutely will acquire. But I'll tell you, since about, you know, 2017 or 18, we didn't like the numbers that we saw. Now, had we bought back then, we'd have done pretty well. But when do you stop? You know, had we bought, you know, a couple of years ago, maybe we might have gotten in trouble. I don't know. But we understood the development more. So we do the, you know, we're in with the architects and we're in with the designers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we're an integral part of it. But we usually bring on a partner now.
That's awesome. And in terms of what you see ahead for you and your company, say over the next 5 years, is the focus going to continue to be the same? I know the landscaping is changing just a little bit in terms of, you know, just the real estate environment in general. But of course, we have rising interest rate and decompressing cap rate and everything else that goes on with that. What will be your focus and your company's going forward for the next couple of years?
Probably not much different than I described. You know, we are a multifamily development private equity shop. So that's our main lane. That's what we're going to stick with. And we still believe that we're, you know, just short of 4 million multifamily units needed over the next, 7 or 8 years. So we know there's a need. We know with these higher interest rates and inflation, that's difficult for young people to buy houses. Well, that just shoves them right over into the rental pool. It'll change at some point. So we try not to overbuild. We stay out of the middle of the city. We do secondary market stuff. You know, we're outside of Austin, outside of San Antonio, but we'll do the multifamily. Time will tell if we continue with the extended stay. We really love what's going on right now, and ground's been broken and projects are going up. We'll see how that goes. If that's the asset class that, you know, Warren Buffett and Goldman Sachs and Blackstone thinks it is, then BlackRock. Yeah, I always mix the two up, but big hedge fund, they put, you know, a lot of money, put $6 billion into extended stay. So if it turns out that that's as good as it's looking right now, we'll continue to do a few more portfolios. Always looking for opportunity. And, you know, as you kind of heard, we pretty much stay in Texas. We've got enough projects going up and down Interstate 35, which splits the state. And that's where all the population is, except for Houston. So we stay up and down Interstate 35. We go over to Houston. I think we got enough work for us. There's always a deal out there somewhere. We don't want to be the biggest. We just want to continue to do good conservative projects and try to kind of do our best job for our investors. So we think there's going to be a continued need for apartments.
So what is the investor sentiment, you know, over the last 18 months, and how are you tackling that, you know, in the current market situation?
Yeah, good question. And you know, and it usually you find that in the capital raise. And capital raising is simply just what you guys are doing right now. It's education. It's all we do is we have this thing. Here's why we like it. And here's all the stuff. You know, if you're interested, let us know. What else can I tell you about it? You know, so you're never selling anything. You're just educating and people raise their hands. So we educate them on the apartment market, or at least what we know on it. We educated them on extended stay. So our capital raises were pretty darn easy for a long time. And that's because we've been at it for 20 years. We have a very deep investor base. But very much like 2008 and in 2001, you know, when there's that wealth effect, when people, and if the stock market goes down, it's going to be even worse. But, you know, when people see interest rates going up, they start kind of holding that money close. They're a little more picky on their investments. And we felt it. I think that our last raise was a little slower. It was a new asset class, so it took some education. But that's an honest answer. I think things are a little slower. People are a little pickier. There've been some bad actors out there, so people are making sure they know who they're investing with. Our folks know us, but you know, you never know. So,
how are you tackling them now? I mean, what is your approach? I mean, I know 18 months have gone by, and right now with the recent articles, you know, there's a lot of fear in the market. You know, a lot of people, you know, we are raising for our deals all the time. And we, you know, we are facing the challenges also. What are you doing?
Well, you know, if there are less investors, there's less investor money. We do less projects, which is exactly what we're doing now. You know, we chose to do that, like I said, 15 months ago. So what we're doing, and I sort of mentioned it before, we have a 12-acre piece of land that's ready to go. We're just delaying that right now. It's not time. It's in a fabulous location, but we want to make sure the numbers work. So we're raising less equity, you know, picking projects that require less equity, or making sure we have a long time frame if it's a large equity raise. We've never done this, but we've discussed, you know, do we bring in capital partners? We can do that. We have some institutions that invest with us. So that's, so we've sort of broadened our capital base, broadened our minds to, you know, bringing other folks in or raising less. That's, you know, supply and demand. So we're not trying to do a jillion projects, and we're trying to do at least what we think is the best. So that's one way we address it, so to speak.
Dr. Burns, time has gone by so fast. This is so educational for our audience. We really appreciate you sharing all this good nuggets on the Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast. We're going to touch just briefly here on a few questions, what we call a lightning round. And sure. One of the things I want to ask is, what's one piece of advice that impacts your life and how you think it may benefit others?
For people that are investing passively, know who you're investing with. That is really important. And I say that just because they're, you know, that's just something that's current with me. Know who you're investing with. There are ways to check. There's some background check companies. You want to know somebody that's invested with them for a long time. You want to talk to other investors. You want to see track record. Because if you can eliminate the human element, you know, market losses are what they are, but human losses are not fun. So that's my new advice for today, is know who you're investing with and do everything you can to get comfortable.
Awesome. Awesome. Great advice. You know, somebody said we first form habits and then habits form us. For a successful man like yourself, what's, share with us some of the personal habits, or just one or two of the personal habits that contribute to your success.
I love habits. I mean, we are our habits, right? You know, Brian Tracy says successful people are simply those that have successful habits. And so I was not the guy who tracked stuff a long time ago. And finally, at some point, I decided, you know what? They always say that, you know, 3% of people write down their goals and 80% of those people reach their goals. So I was too cool for that until one day I thought, you know what? Get your ego out of the way and start doing that. So I started writing down goals. Goals are great, but you support them with habits. So I truly track my habits. I have a habit tracker, and it's I track whether I do, you know, I do 100 push-ups a day, and I've been slacking. All right, I'm saying it on live TV or whatever, but I'm slacking. I was really good for a number of years, but I track 100 push-ups a day, reading every day, taking a hike a certain amount of times, working out with a trainer. Those sort of things. There's some business habits I track too, but as I look at my tracker, the first half of it's all health, longevity, living a good life, telling my wife I love her, things like that. So, you know, that little tracker is revealing, you know, you can do that for a couple of months and you go back and look at it. And if there's lots of X's or check marks, you know, that's something you've got going right. If there's not so many check marks, then it's either something that's not important to you and you need a different habit, or it's something you need to work on. So I just try to be a little bit better Tom Burns than I was yesterday in whatever area that is. If it's my health or it's my relationships or it's my business or my reading, you know, I just try to do something every day to move forward. Folks will be really surprised what compounding does when you do those little habits. Little changes at a time, over time, have massive effects. Compounding is real, and so it's very important to keep those. You know, Peter Drucker says we overestimate what we can do in a year, we underestimate what we do in 5 years. And that's what happens. You see that geometric growth at some time. So, start small, do something. You know, just put your shoes on and then maybe go out and try to run the next day, but just do something to get you going and it'll become a habit. So that was probably longer than you asked, but I'm a huge fan of habits.
No, that's great. That's great. Thanks for sharing. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. You talk about reading for a minute there, and most of the folks we have on this podcast, that's always a part of, look like a part of the habit that they do. Can you suggest, if somebody want to go down the path that you're going down in terms of whether it be development or just real estate in general, is there a book you could recommend to those individuals who would like to emulate what you're doing here, Dr. Burns, with the success you've had?
Yeah, God, nobody wants to emulate me, but so I'll give you a couple. If you want to learn some or get kind of some of the basics of real estate, my friend Kenny McElroy wrote a book called The ABCs of Investing. He actually wrote several, you know, The Advanced Guide to Real Estate Investing. Kenny's been around this game for a long time. He started as a property manager. He owns 10,000 apartment units. Really good book on just good basic real estate and understanding. And that's if you want to go buy something of your own, whether it's a single family home or you want to buy a big apartment complex, you know, the numbers and the thought process is pretty much the same. If somebody wants to be a passive investor, so I've already talked about, you know, try to understand who you're investing with, but there is a book out there by Brian Burke called The Hands-Off Investor. Most people know it. I don't even know Brian Burke, but I push his book all the time because it's an encyclopedic volume of questions to ask, things to do, things to look for. And that'll give you a lot of knowledge on, you know, kind of what to look for when you're investing with somebody else.
This has been a great podcast. You have shared a lot of information of what good things you are doing. Personally, for me, you know, information coming from you is verified and validated because of your experience, right? I mean, you have been in the industry for, you know, whatever, 20 years, give us a solid advice, something that you believe in your true heart. Something, you know, younger people like us probably can benefit from.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, your people are always so kind, you know, saying all the nice things about me. But, you know, what you hear on the podcast or you see on a talk presentation is like a Facebook post, right? It's all the good stuff. There's bad things that happen. And so you've got to realize that life is waves. Life itself is, you know, not going to give you anything. So there's going to be up times and down times. Try to understand. And it really, as I got older and got more gray hair, realized that when, you know, when times are down or when there's some sort of mistake or some sort of speed bump, something good always comes out of it. Now, if you quit and just complain about what happened to you, then you don't get the lesson. So advice number one is be persistent, keep going. You know, time is the best real estate hack in the world. It'll make a good deal look great. It'll make a bad deal look good. Hang in there and don't quit. You will eventually get the lesson from the mistake. Don't fear from them. If you want to learn best from some mistakes and it's early, go in small to whatever you're doing, because the lesson's going to have the same size. So go in small, you'll lose small, but you'll still get the full size lesson, and that will work for you in the future. So don't quit, stay persistent, develop some good habits, and you'll get there. I tell people to be patient, but I like to call it active patience, meaning stay in the market, stay in whatever you're doing, but realize that compounding in nature takes some time, and it will reward you if you don't quit.
Awesome. Awesome. Often the word, you know, it's a great nugget that has come out from your heart, you know, and I have taken personally to my heart, you know, obviously. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Burns. How can our listeners reach out to you? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, I've got a website. It's called richdoctor.com. Crazy name, but it's easy to remember. I wrote a book called Why Doctors Don't Get Rich. That's on Amazon, and I don't make money from it, but it's got some pretty useful stuff. You always tell people that won't change my life, but it might change yours, because I know I've had books that have changed the trajectory of my life. And if anybody has read that book and it's helped you or made a change in your life, send me an email. Tell me the story to hello@richdoctor.com. And the website's got a few free things you can get if you want, things that have helped me over the years. So it's just some tools and articles and items there.
Dr. Burns, wanted to say thank you so much for being on the Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast. Thanks for taking time out your day, and best of luck in all that you do in the future.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Cashflow Champs Podcast. Cashflow Champs partners with busy working professionals and entrepreneurs that want to build and maintain generational wealth through real estate. Visit cashflowchamps.com to learn more about us.